I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're going to be looking at prices for many of the Obamacare health plans. There will be big increases, according to many press accounts, in many parts of the country. The average mid-level plan, which is evidently the most popular plan here, will cost about 22% more in 2017. In some states, the price is going down. In many other states, the price is going up. We're going to talk about why that is the case, so the reasons for all of this, how many people are affected by rate increases, and actually we'll look at the future of Obamacare as well, because the incoming administration has said they will repeal and replace Obamacare. Joining us this hour, and it's been a while since we last chatted, is Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal. She is the editor-in-chief of the nonprofit Kaiser Health News, and before that, she was an award-winning health and environmental reporter for the New York Times. Her series on the cost of American health care, Paying Till It Hurts, was critically acclaimed. She appeared on our show each time one of those articles was published in the Times to talk about her exceptional reporting. She's also a non-practicing medical doctor and spent her early career in the emergency department. She's also spent a great deal of time reporting from China. So we're delighted to have Elizabeth with us again. Welcoming phone calls, I would think we'll get a lot of phone calls, and I'm particularly interested in hearing from those of you who are on the Affordable Care Act plan and what you are seeing in terms of premium increases, what you are thinking in terms of how your coverage has been, whether or not you like your health care. And then more broadly, we'll talk about whether or not it needs to be replaced and repealed. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, at K. Dunn Show. Dr. Elizabeth Rosenthal, a pleasure to speak with you again. How are you?
I'm great. It's really a pleasure to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. We love the knowledge that you have here on the Affordable Care Act and costs and all of that. So break this down for me. The headlines were big increases in many parts of the country, about 22% more for a very popular plan. Why is there such a huge increase, and does it affect most people who are on the Affordable Care Act?
Well, healthcare is ultimately very, very local, so whether it affects you or not, it depends on your particular state and your particular plan. But I think what we're seeing in the ACA is really happening in the commercial market as well, but we just don't notice it. Your health costs are going up. We see it. Those of us who are lucky enough to have a commercial insurance, our premiums are going up, our deductibles are going up, the prices we pay for medicines are going up, but our employers take on some of that cost increase each year. So if you're wondering, well, why aren't we getting raises? It's because our company's healthcare costs are going up, and that's where the money is going. So I think what we're seeing in the ACA in part reflects what's going on as a bigger problem for all of us in society, is that we just pay too much for healthcare, and the ACA, for all of the things it did do, it really didn't address that issue of why we in the U.S. pay so much more for everything medical than people in other countries.
I find amazing that nobody has ever done a really lengthy study. I know you've looked at this pretty extensively, but why doesn't Congress have an examination of why the costs are so darned high?
Well, I think nobody sees that as their mission, and we have come to see high costs as kind of, you know, the burden, high healthcare costs is America's burden. It's inevitable. It's because we like technology. It's because, you know, there are a million different explanations, and I think each individual thinks, what can I do about this? This is like, you know, a big problem like global warming. Can I solve this myself? All I can do is kind of troubleshoot my own bills. And Congress, you know, you see bills come up again and again and again to bite off little parts of the problem, and the ACA tried in an indirect way to do it. You know, they'll say, last year or the year before, Senators Klobuchar and McCain had a bill to lower drug costs. And you know, there's a lot of drama. Everyone realizes that these costs are out of control, but it never goes very far. And you can say, That's because there's a lot of lobbying to make sure it doesn't, which is true. You can also say it's partly because our healthcare system has become so overwhelmingly complex that it's hard to know where to start. Or you can say, which I think, there are a lot of different ways you could control costs, but we can't agree on what those should be. And that's partly this, you know, ACA versus repeal and replace debate that's going on. It's not like it can't be done, but there's tremendous philosophical differences about how to go about doing it.
Mm-hmm. I have read, and tell me how many of insurance companies have dropped out, that a number of insurance companies have lost a lot of money from the ACA, and they simply aren't participating, which means that if you're in certain parts of the country, you have maybe one insurer, It doesn't bring the cost down necessarily because there's no competition here. Why have so many insurers dropped out?
Well, insurers say they're losing a lot of money on the ACA plans. You know, that is, you know, true and somewhat deceptive. I mean, if you're paying too much to hospitals and doctors who have become very, very powerful, particularly the hospitals, as they've consolidated in setting prices. So if you're an insurer and you're trying to negotiate a good rate with local hospital system corporation, you may be stuck paying what they ask. And so that's one reason why your prices are going to go up, that it's we're talking about behemoths negotiating with each other over our health care and our lives. Another thing is that, you know, a lot of people wanted in on the ACA thinking it was going to be a good moneymaker. I mean, you got the American Hospital Association in, the AMA, insurers, and more sick people may have signed up than they'd hope. More healthy people decided to pay the penalty, which relative to the cost of health care isn't very high. So I think, you know, that's a problem. And some companies, frankly, probably set, you know, we see this in our cable companies. They set teaser rates to make it look attractive, right? And then, lo and behold, you see the bill for year two is suddenly twice as much.
Right.
And there was definitely some of that going on in the initial ACA enrollment as well. So there are lots of reasons why people are seeing these crazy rate increases. But I think the real problem is, you know, now I'm hearing from a lot of people for whom buying health insurance is the single largest expense for their family. And they're deciding, no, you know, we just can't afford it. And if you want a health insurance, if you want some people to be insured, everyone needs to be insured. I think that's pretty clear. And that's not happening.
Mm-hmm. I've also explained this to me, read that in states like Rhode Island, the insurance rates have gone down 14%. In some other states, they've gone up as much as 25% or even more than 100%. Why is there such huge variation, Elizabeth?
Well, I think part of it is, you know, did you set teaser rates to begin with, or were you realistic? Is there a dominant hospital system in your area that can mandate, can demand whatever fees they want, or do the insurers have relative bargaining power? I mean, healthcare, it entirely depends on the local circumstances, the relative power structure in this complex negotiation that ultimately determines our healthcare costs and our insurance costs. And, you know, some states were much better at setting up their exchanges than others. So, you know, it's funny on my I have a Facebook group that came out of the series called the Pain Till It Hurts Facebook group. And every time someone posts a story about, you know, this is crazy, and it's a fascinating group because people post the documents they get from insurers showing their rate hikes or showing their options. And some of them are, you know, facing for a family of four premiums of $2,000 a month.
Whoa.
And a $10,000 deductible. So your insurance doesn't even kick in till you've spent $34,000. I mean, very few families can afford that. But, you know, every time someone posts that, someone will say, hey, you know, I'm here in X county in California, and this has been a lifesaver for me. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very, very variable. And I think the people who are really suffering, you know, if you fall beneath that number, and I think it's about $102,000 where you're eligible for subsidies, you're probably pretty happy because that helps keep these crazy number costs that we hear down. But it's the people I hear from the most who are having the hardest time are, I would call them the upper middle class. You know, they make too much to qualify for the subsidies. But they're not rich. You know, they're living on you know, one or two salaries, working really hard. And frankly, you know, if you're making $105,000 a year, spending $33,000 or $34,000 of it on health insurance right. alone doesn't make sense.
Right.
You know, they're stuck.
So let's talk, before we go to phone calls, let's talk about the future of health care. We have an incoming administration that has vowed to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, lickety-split. Mm-hmm. Will it be done that quickly? I can't imagine going through all of this. Think about how long the last debate was for the Affordable Care Act. It went on for years. Have you seen a plan that would be better than what we have now? And can all of this be accomplished pretty rapidly?
Well, this is a fascinating question for me because I now, in my new job, sit in an office about midway between Congress and the White House. So I've gotten a quick education in how Congress works on this. So I think the short answer is there's no way to, you know, just repeal everything in the ACA, but through budget reconciliation, a lot of its provisions can be undone pretty rapidly. But the question is, if you're a Republican, what do you replace it with? And to be fair, you know, not everything in the ACA worked fantastically. Some of the parts would have been, for a Democratic administration, would have had to been dealt with. You couldn't, you know, these insurance premiums are not, for some people, are just not supportable. But I think the Republicans have not yet to come to agreement about what replace will look like. And that's a big problem. You can't just, you know, destroy the building without any plan about what should take its place. Because particularly with things like expanded Medicaid, you know, there are tens of millions of people who are above who wouldn't have qualified for traditional Medicaid, who now do qualify for it because of the ACA. Are you suddenly going to take away their insurance? Not if you want to win your next election. We did a nice story about the fact that Mike Pence, the vice president elect, when he was governor of Indiana, he spearheaded that state's Medicaid expansion. And a lot of people are happy with that. They have insurance for the first time because of that. So is he really going to be in a position to take it away? Likewise, a lot of the red state governors.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen with Medicaid? We don't know. Our president-elect, Donald Trump, has said in interviews he's going to tackle high drug prices. Okay, well, what's the plan? How is that going to happen? We don't know. So I think there is much out there that remains to be seen in this repeal and replace narrative. And it's really easy when you're running for president to say we're going to repeal it and replace it with something better. It's really hard to figure out, and even more than that, to get agreement on what better means and what it will look like.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be watching very closely here in D.C. Come January about what repeal and replace looks like.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're watching. Plus, you have some of the provisions, the pre-existing conditions. People are accepted that wholeheartedly and would hate to see that go. I would think there would be an uproar. Having your children on your plan until he or she is 26 years old, also wildly popular.
Yes, and you know, Donald Trump did say pretty quickly after he was elected, oh, not those two provisions. You know, we're going to make sure people with pre-existing conditions can get covered, and we're going to make sure kids can stay on their parents' insurance policy till 26. Now, you know, I since I've been kind of a healthcare wonk for a long time, you know, there have been other there are other solutions proposed and tried for the pre-existing condition problem. Some of those have not worked so well, and some of those are being re-proposed. I mean, there's the question of high-risk pools. Can we say people who have pre-existing conditions have to go into high-risk pools that will be subsidized so that their insurance rates can be manageable? What we often found in the past was at the state level, those high-risk pools were not funded adequately, so people would be thrown into them with really minor pre-existing conditions because, of course, the insurers decide what that means, not the government, and suddenly find themselves with, you know, again, $2,000 a month insurance premiums where, you know, essentially it wasn't an option for them anymore. So I think, you know, as with everything in healthcare, the devil is in the details and it's very individual. But, you know, the goal of a system has to be to make it work well and give something decent for every citizen.
Elizabeth Rosenthal, healthcare wonk, is our guest this hour. She is now editor-in-chief of the nonprofit Kaiser Health News. She was an award-winning health and environmental reporter for the New York Times for a long time in her series, and we interviewed her each time one came out in the series, Pain Till It Hurts. Covered very extensively, critically acclaimed, covered the high cost of health care. Here's our phone number. We only have one line open, so we'd love to hear from you, particularly interested in hearing from those of you on the Affordable Care Act. But, of course, there are changes afoot to health care in the country. And another question is, what would you like to see that would replace what we have now that you think would work better for you and for everybody? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, where we always enjoy your comments, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. All right, phone calls now for Elizabeth. We start with Joseph in Madison. Hello, Joseph.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Good.
So, yeah, I have a question. So my my monthly cost went from 173 to 562.
Ooh.
And I guess I'm kind of in this range, and I'm wanting to know, you know, what's possibly coming down in the future here, because if I'm having to pay I'm in about $61,000 annual a year, and if my premium now is to 562. So, is there going to be something available, you know, for less than 562 in the future without the tax credit? It's just because 562, yeah, to be honest, that's a lot right now.
Yeah, it is a lot.
It is a lot, and I think you know, one of the questions will become how to restructure those subsidies and tax credits to make insurance more affordable. I mean, it can work from either direction. I mean, something has to be done. All the charts show that the rate of spending we're at will, you know, not only put severe stress on individuals, but also our economy at large. I mean, we need to do repairs of infrastructure, we need better education systems, and we're spending all of that on healthcare, and a lot of public money goes into healthcare. So you can either think of it, work on it in two ways. You can say, what percent of income, and a lot of countries do this, is it reasonable to ask people to pay for health care, including health insurance? And a lot of countries have settled on the in the area of 7%, 8%, and then the government kicks in the rest. But you also, I think, combined with that, in order to make that even vaguely practical, you need some push down from on high with of medical pricing, and you know, because insurers are basically doing a pass through, they get prices from the providers, and they figure out, you know, they may deny a few things, but they they deny a lot more and more. That's one of their methods to control prices, but that doesn't work very well because they're often denying things that patients think they shouldn't. But you could go at this from the more market-oriented way, where you say we all deserve a price list. We deserve to see prices up front, and then that kind of consumer pressure will bring them down. You could say the government will put in price ceilings or price regulation, as it does for Medicare. That solution has not been very popular in the U.S., but it may, you know, we have to do something. You can say we're going to expand the Medicare, the option to buy into Medicare to lower ages, because Medicare does set prices and regulate prices to some point. I mean, there are tons of ways to solve it, and we have to pick one of them and go with it. And that's kind of why, in between my old job and my new, I wrote a book which is coming out next April called An American Sickness, How Healthcare Became Big Business and How We Can Take It Back. Mm. And there are a lot of strategies in there. It's not a book that says there's this answer or that answer. Basically what it says is you can't choose none of the above. And that's been our problem, that politically we're so divided on what the solution should be that we don't address it head on. And patients suffer. You know, that's the problem.
Elizabeth, how much less would Joseph have to make to be eligible for subsidies?
I don't know about his particular situation because that varies somewhat state by state, but you really don't want a situation where people can, you know, are encouraged to work less in order to get
health insurance. I was wondering about that, right.
I mean, I even heard of someone, and this is not a strategy I would, you know, advocate, but, you know, it makes sense. People do what they have to because they want to be responsible and be insured, of someone signing up at a local college for some courses because then she and her family would be eligible for university health insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, that's it's not a good reflection on our society that people are resorting to these kind of tactics. There was an amazing op-ed in the New York Times last weekend about someone who joined a Christian Health Ministries plan to who was contemplating it to get health insurance. It's not quite health insurance, but it's kind of a collective, a Christian, faith-based collective to pay insurance costs. Many people have found those work for them. The rates are much lower. But her dilemma was, in order to join that, you had to sign something saying you didn't believe in abortion. And that was hard, and she ultimately decided that was a deal breaker. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think we're asking people to make these choices because we don't have products that suit the very people in America we say we care about, you know, that big middle class.
Right. Well, what are you going to do, Joseph?
Well, again, all kinds of things running through my mind as far as like what you're saying, you know, is to work, you know, do what you've got to do. I mean, there's all these different options that, well, if I would join this or become that, you know, then, but it's for all the wrong reasons. And you know what? I mean, I'm from back in the day. I remember that was one of the great things about your employer in the past. I mean, you used to pay $3 a month. You'd get full coverage. That America was great then. I'm hoping that this having America become great again somehow includes the problem, whatever all the problems are, to fix that. Because right now, everybody's scrambling, trying to figure out and finagle a way to afford this. Because, you know, it's difficult.
Right. It shouldn't be this hard.
And I think, can I ask how old you are?
I'll be able to afford it.
How old are you, Joseph? Do you mind saying?
I'm actually 62.
Yeah. See, I hear a lot of people of a certain age saying, "I can't wait till I get to Medicare. I can't." You know, people used to dread getting older, and now I hear on my Facebook group, so many people are posting things like 9 months to go. If I can make it through these 9 months, I think I'll be okay. And it's is a good solution, but it's not a good. It shows how stuck people feel.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much, Joseph. All the best to you. Wade sends this on Facebook. When will this stupidity end? Here's a proven solution. It's single payer. Congress is sitting on the Medicare for All bill that answers the problems and saves $154 billion in the first year. Let's get on this already. Who does this Congress work for anyhow?
Well, many countries use single payer. It works very well. For every country, there are, cultural and medical preferences, and many people feel that single payer wouldn't be as easily acceptable here. Although I would say to that, patients may have less choice. They may have a harder time. They may have to wait for unnecessary surgery. I often hear from patients, I really needed to see a dermatologist, and I had to wait 2 weeks. Okay, well, in a more centralized system, that kind of triage often does exist.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it exists here for different kinds of reasons, for financial reasons. So, I don't see this Congress as going in the single payer direction. It was interesting that by the end of the campaign, Hillary Clinton was suggesting lowering the Medicare age, which is essentially moving towards a single payer system, or at least expanding a single payer option. So, we have a new administration coming into the mix. They're going to suddenly have to open their eyes to all the problems here and find their solutions. So far, single payer, I haven't heard be in the mix, but I would say, too, that many physicians I speak to have come around to thinking that single payer, or that not single payer, but that Medicare is a pretty good system. The payments aren't great, but they're not terrible, and a lot of the big insurers are negotiating even lower rates now. So with all the hassle and the paperwork that goes into it, they would take that now. Mm. So, there's a lot on the table, and there's a lot that's up for negotiation, I think.
Jacqueline in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. First off, my solution is allow everybody the option of being able to buy into Medicare. But one of my points on the second point is the cost rise we saw this last year. My understanding, it had to do with the fact that Congress in the last budget removed compensation to the insurance companies for the fact that in the beginning, ACA would have much more high-risk insured people than low-risk. And that was to continue on for a decade, compensating them for that until it become more balanced. But then that was removed last year. So this year, the insurance companies had to jack their rates up because they were no longer being compensated for all the high-risk insured that they were taking on and not getting that many low-risk insureds.
Yeah, I think one of the big issues with the Affordable Care Act, when we talk about it being a success or a failure, is that it was very difficult to get it passed, and then the hostile members of Congress did a lot to make it even more difficult to be a success. So they had promised these risk corridor payments, which were then reduced severely, and it put the insurers in a pretty untenable spot. It also put there was a new kind of insurer developed by the Affordable Care Act called the cooperative insurers, which were nonprofit insurance companies in a number of states. They too depended heavily on these risk corridor payments, and I'm sure many of the listeners have seen that those co-ops have gone belly up in many states now, which is really sad, you know. So we had an experiment and then in many ways sabotaged it.
Mm. And Elizabeth, what's happened to all of the young healthy people? Had they signed up for the ACA or not?
Well, you know, a lot of them are on their parents' policies, so they're very happy about that, including my own children. I think some have signed up. If they got a good subsidy, they did. If they're in this, you know, they're making better money and didn't get a subsidy, I think a lot of them decided they looked at the penalty, which is, you know, in the hundreds of dollars, and looked at the cost of insurance, which was in the thousands, and thought, I'll take my chances.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in some ways, the penalties weren't high enough relative to the increase in insurance costs to make this a no-brainer for people. You know, I think most of the people, it wasn't, you know, you always hear about people who say it's my choice if I want insurance or not. But I think for most people, it wasn't a philosophical decision. It was a very practical economic one. You know, can I afford this or not? People would like to have health insurance for the most part. It's just, am I willing to spend, 25% of my household income on it? No. And do I want to not be able to send my kid to college because of it? Well, I'll take my chances.
Right. This message from Bill on Facebook. I have a pre-existing condition. The ACA is working extremely well. My 2017 premiums are increasing only $15 to $41 a month. The deductible is increasing $150 to $600. If Donald Trump follows through on his vow to abolish the premium subsidy, my monthly premiums will increase to $900 a month, which will be nearly my entire income.
Yeah. I mean, this is very—it's very individual. I mean, the single most important thing the ACA did was to take care of people with pre-existing conditions so they could get insurance, and the subsidies for those who got them—it's it's been a lifesaver, literally a lifesaver.
Yes.
So the next administration, I think, is going to have to deal with that. You can't suddenly leave people who now have health care out in the cold.
Let's go to Susan in Madison. Hello, Susan.
Hi. Our health care, I'm 59 and my husband just turned 64, and our health care just increased in November to $30,000 a year out of pocket.
Wow. Ooh-wee.
And, yeah. And my husband recently actually had a heart attack. And anyway, we were glad we're on the Affordable Care Act. We're grateful that we have the resources to pay for this. It wasn't how we were intending to use, $30,000 a year at this point in our lives. But I think my husband used to be employed in the insurance industry, and I remember when this went down and the Supreme Court made its ruling, he was in his office and he came out and he said, the American public has no idea what just came down. This is going to be apocalyptic right around the end of Obama's term. I mean, reality is going to hit, and it has. And historically, we are conservatives. We're not supporters of Donald Trump by any stretch of the imagination. Found him shockingly horrible. But we would say that we think that it's very important to cover those people that need coverage. But the way they went about this was terrible, and I'll be fascinated to see if they can recover it. I don't personally think that, the government does a very good job running anybody's health care. I think they should have a hand in it, and I don't know how they'll do that in terms of, a safety net for folks. I do think folks should have a safety net, but this is just untenable.
Mm-hmm.
So. What
do you think, Susan, about the idea of lowering the age for eligibility for Medicare? Does that strike you as a good idea or not?
I can't say that I'm still thinking about that. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Something needs to be done, and the horse is out of the barn here. So I think it's unrealistic to think they're going to repeal it, but. If they can bring some, competition across state lines and that kind of thing, I think we might be in a better position. I don't know. I think it's a mess.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, you had to pay a whole lot of money out of pocket. Elizabeth.
Yes, I think mess is a good description, unfortunately, of where we stand at the moment. It's clear that the ACA, for, to me, the important things it did, it also had created some significant problems that needed to be addressed. And now we've been thrown into this, you know, kind of let's start over. The problem is the ACA was a very complicated bill that took years to pass and includes this insurance issue as well as a number of other things. So I hope and I trust that the new Trump administration is going through all the things that bill does and trying to pick out the good things and figure out better ways for the not so good things. But I think I feel like a broken record in some ways. The ultimate problem is the structure of our health system and our hospitals is just too expensive. And you can try 20 different ways to provide better health insurance, but unless you deal with that core problem, we're not going to get much of anywhere. So I hope that if they want to go to the competition route, certainly there's some pretty interesting FTC suits in the works about drug price collusion. We could go after drug companies a lot more aggressively to bring us reasonable prices. I'm really await to see what ideas will come out of Washington now, because we have had great success in some things, but overall we are not much better off and healthcare costs are growing pretty quickly once again.
In a way, it's so demoralizing, isn't it, Elizabeth? Because I remember clearly doing show after show after show, starting with conversations where people from business and healthcare and doctors would sit across from me here in Milwaukee and agree that something had to be done, and they agreed on what some of the major issues were. And here we are, you know, some 7 years later, and we're in a mess again.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and I think that's part of the problem, frankly, that, I've been looking at this stuff since Hillary Clinton tried to reform the healthcare system in the 1990s. Mm. So we've been going around in circles on this for literally decades now. And part of the problem I find is that every sector says, oh, well, yeah, you know, our prices are high, but look over there, look at the doctors. And the doctors say, well, yeah, you know, my prices are high, but look at the hospitals. And so the real answer is everyone has to change what they do, including the patients. And so it's going to be a big shock to the system, but we have to do it.
Mm. Thanks, Susan, for your call. Dolores in Kenosha, hi.
Oh, this is a wonderful program. I worked in a hospital for 46 years, and I just had to retire. I'm about 6 months out from Medicare, which makes me nervous, too, because who knows what their rumblings in Congress, what they want to do with Medicare.
Yeah.
I think the big, and I watched the 4 hours when all these members of Congress got together with the president and talked about this. I watched all 4 hours. And there were some good ideas bounced around, but they never dealt with it. They haven't dealt with it in all these years that Obama's been in. The big problem with getting the ACA in the first place was that, and was one of my biggest disappointments when I graduated from nursing school, is how much I realized I was now working for an industry.
Yeah.
I wasn't just going into work to take care of these people that I knew.
Yeah.
So you have the big drug companies, and you have the big insurance companies, and the big supply anybody who supplies things to your hospitals and your clinics and your whatnot. I happened to know on talking with our CEO at the hospital that the last CAT scanner we bought cost $1.2
million. Wow.
It saves a lot of lives. It saves a lot of lives.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you look at a lot of the other equipment that we get from suppliers, some of those beds that are getting a lot better than when they used to, and I worked when we used to crank them from the foot of the bed to raise your head.
Mm-hmm.
They cost more than my first brand-new Ford Pinto did.
Mm. Yeah.
And
that was not a good car. I had a Ford Pinto once, too. I remember that.
The only thing I've heard anybody say is, well, you know, the first thing we have to do is we have to let the insurance companies compete over, you know, over state lines. Well, we've got Verizon and all these other companies competing for our business for cell phone use. I haven't noticed that they've done much better for us on that.
Mm. Elizabeth.
I mean, the idea of competing on state line across state lines hasn't historically done that much to bring prices down. Allowing Americans to import from drugs from Canada would make a big difference, but of course there are concerns about doing that, but that's one idea that's been floated by Republicans in the past. So, you know, maybe that one will come up again, but I think the caller is absolutely right. You know, this is an industry. We like to say hospitals are not for profit. I mean, they are technically, but they are big businesses. I mean, what other nonprofits do you see advertising on TV and in glossy magazines?
Mm-hmm.
And we pay. And I think one thing that can happen is that our employers have kind of been asleep at the wheel in purchasing health insurance on our behalf. They, you know, if you're, you know, the New York, well, that's a bad example. If you're a big United Airlines, you bargain really hard to get a good price on your jets, right? That's a big priority for you. But you don't do the same kind of bargaining for your health insurance. You go out to a consultant, say, give us three options, and you pick the lowest cost. And it's hard because health insurance policies are hard to read. But I think there's got to be much more pressure applied from big purchasers of health insurance, like the unions and the big employers, to produce something, you know, really valuable for us that meets our health care and our economic needs. And, you know, part of the issue with the ACA was that to get it passed, the president needed buy-in from the hospitals and the drug companies and the insurers, who are all big businesses. So they're not going to buy into something they think is going to impact their income. So, you know, if Donald Trump says he's good at doing deals, as he says, you know, it's his, maybe he should start doing deals with these three sectors, because we haven't been bargaining very hard for our health care. We've been kind of quiet as patients and as employers in being told, okay, here are the three options, and I'm just going to pick one because what else can I do?
Oh, maybe he could be successful in this realm. Who knows? Huh?
we deserve. All I can say is I won't comment on that. But you know, I can say as patients, we all deserve much better deals than we're getting right now. Much, much better deals for what we pay.
Elizabeth Rosenthal, editor-in-chief now of the nonprofit Kaiser Health News. She was, until recently, an award-winning health reporter for the New York Times in her series on the cost of health care, Paying Till It Hurts, recently was ended. And it was a terrific series. We interviewed her about that. And she has a new book that is coming out in April, she said, and we'll be sure and talk to her about that when it's released. More phone calls momentarily. We have one line open for you, 1-800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network. To Andy in Hubertus. Hi, Andy.
Hi. What a great show. There's so many things to talk about. This is the first time that I've had to get onto the ACA, and I was shocked. I'm a self-employed person, and I'm looking at probably about the cheapest bronze plan is about $700 a month, and that's going to be tripling my deductible as well. My prescriptions, I only take two of them. They're going to be increasing from the plan that I was on with my wife from, I believe it was $8 to up to $35. Now, the frustrating thing is when you're going and signing up, my wife is going to be, for the first time, getting on Medicare. And so when they ask how many people are in your household, you have to include yourself and your spouse and anybody else, but it's just the two of us. And then they ask for your combined household income. Well, if I'm the only one needing the insurance, why do we have to combine the incomes? And that's very frustrating because that pushes me up to a point where I can't get a tax credit. And also, being self-employed, I'm not eligible for a tax credit or being in a group, so to speak, because I have to have another employee other than myself. And, you know, it was just very, very frustrating. Another thing that I know, I kind of going all across the board here, when I was initially signing up, I would, you know, you go online and you get these quotes that are emailed to you when you, and on these all these phone calls. I did sign up for this one company who I later with later in the last within the next 12 hours canceled. But I found out through their small print after I downloaded their documents that they sent to me is that they're just a discount program for medical services. And it said in the fine print, they do not satisfy the ACA's requirements. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling there's a lot of people that might be getting scammed that way. And there's so much of this program, and I'm still for it, but there's so much of this program that needs to be fixed. But because we're so polarized, you know, it's looked at as either a Republican or a Democrat solution.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to get these fixed. Mm. And, you know, to be sick or need health insurance, it doesn't come down to being a Democrat or Republican. It becomes, you know, coming down to being a human, but you need these things.
Absolutely. True words, Andy.
I think that's a really common problem that because we believe in, you know, entrepreneurship and free enterprise and choice, you know, we love choice. But that has meant we have very little standardization of healthcare plans. I mean, one thing you can say about countries that have a national health system is that you don't have this really, really difficult position we put people into where they have to make these choices, but they're making choices without good information. You know, there are dozens of plans with different kinds of deductibles. The insurance directories of providers are totally inaccurate. There's fine print. I mean, you know, it's such a headache where I live to even choose your cell phone provider. I can't imagine. And then we expect people to do it again and again every December. It's a really tall order,
right.
And it's shopping with no information.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get a price quote later. Okay. You know, would you go shop for TVs that way? Not really.
Yeah. And you shouldn't have to go through the process Andy's going through to go from one place to another, and then you find out, you read the fine print, and it's not right. And even if you're on the plan, I've talked to people who have found the plan very helpful, but it's not streamlined yet, and you can spend hours on the phone with somebody and trying to maneuver a whole system. It is just too damn complex, I think.
Yeah, it's like a Rube Goldberg machine. It's so complicated.
Right. Elizabeth, we'll look forward to speaking with you again for sure when your book comes out, okay?
Terrific. I'll be here.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Rosenthal, who knows her medicine and healthcare. She's a healthcare wonk, as she aptly described herself earlier this hour. She's now editor-in-chief of the nonprofit Kaiser Health News. Before that, she worked for the New York Times for quite some time. She was based in China for a while, and she was an award-winning health reporter. Her series on the cost of American healthcare, Paying Till It Hurts. Thanks so much to Scotty Myers who's taken a bow in the other room for producing this show, and to Scotty as well for on-air production here in Milwaukee. Books of 2016, how could you go wrong with Nancy Pearl and Daniel Golden? And they're coming up right after the news.